There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
You have found the Shanty Pants Show. Hello, it's Shanny, the least influential influencer that there ever was. With a heart full of laughter and a journey that runs deeper than the trendiest makeup you may know me from my ridiculously comedic fashion and makeup tutorials on social media, but guess what? There's so much more to the story. I was born, raised, and married in a cult. When I left the cult at 31 years old, I had no knowledge about real life or how to process what I had been through. I felt very alone. The past couple of years, I've been on an incredible journey of learning, growing, and recovering, and I'm excited to share this with you. I'll bring you stories from the Cultiverse, where many cult survivors and experts share their knowledge and experiences. Their stories are more than inspiring. They're a roadmap to self-discovery and resilience. So get ready for a podcast that's part comedy, part wisdom, and a whole lot of heart. If you feel alone in your journey, my hope is that that will change once you hear these stories. Welcome to the Shanty Pants Show. Thank you so much, Kate, for being here today on the Shanty Pants Show. We are so excited to have you. And why don't you go ahead and give us a little brief introduction of who you are, and then we'll go from there.
Thanks, Shanny. I'm really excited to be here ever since meeting you last year. And I just really enjoy what you do in the world. So thanks for having me on. My name is Kate West, and I'm a writer. My day job is as an editor in the book publishing industry, and I volunteer for Tears of Eden, which is a nonprofit to help survivors of spiritual abuse within evangelicalism. So those are my three big things. I'm also starting a new podcast with a few friends called Survivors Discuss, where we talk about faith deconstruction and trauma survival. So a lot of things going on. And my new book is coming out in April, which is called Rift, a memoir of breaking away from Christian patriarchy. So a lot to talk about.
Yes. Oh, I'm so excited about your podcast. This is news to me, and this is going to be amazing. That will be so great. Yeah. We need more things like that.
I'm doing it with Sherry Smith and Claire McIver Heath, who's in Australia, and we've all survived similar high control groups, and we're trying to create panel discussions about different topics. So we've done female empowerment and bodily autonomy. We've done racism in the church, and coming up, we're doing a special episode about cults with Yanya Lalich and Nikki Chi. So I'm excited. Lots of things to talk about.
Okay, so very, very exciting about the podcast, because obviously I love podcasts and I can't wait to go listen to this. And I can't believe I didn't know about it. That's very sad. So I will be going and listening. And I think you were kind of talking, or you did talk a little bit about the kind of what you guys do and what you discuss. And I think I'm very excited to go listen. I think it's so valuable for people that come from groups like us to kind of hear the back and forth between others that have come from the same. Recently, my sister and I have done a couple of podcast episodes here on the Shanty Pants Show, and it was just kind of random. I'm like, hey, you want to be on the podcast? Just like we did some live episodes, and I had wanted to try that. And so, of course, I dragged the sister in to do that with me. And so we did a couple episodes. The response I got from those episodes, which were like, you know, not edited, nothing. I just did them live and put them out there. The response was so crazy. And I think it was just more that we're sisters. We know each other. We have grew up in the same home, the same controlling kind of group, but different perspectives. So I think it's so valuable for people to kind of hear that back and forth and kind of the more discussion around these type of groups. I think it's different than what we have, like what I have going on here with where I'm interviewing a person. And of course, this is valuable. We want to hear stories. And I think there's so much value there. But it was interesting to me to see the difference. Like, oh, okay, there is a need for both. Mm-hmm. Because it's a different format, you know? So mm-hmm. I'm excited to go listen to yours and see what you guys are doing there. That's very exciting.
Thanks. So, and I love the episode with your sister because you're right. It feels different to hear about a conversation between two people who went through the same or similar things. And I think for a lot of us, we don't have family members or we might not have the same connections. So being able to listen in on a conversation, if you don't have that, can be really helpful because you might not be able to process that with someone in your life at the moment.
Right. I didn't even think about that, but so true. And I am so grateful, you know, obviously I get asked all the time, like, are your parents still in? Are your, you know, so do you have siblings still in? And thankfully for me, I don't. Everyone's out. My husband's parents are still in. But I didn't have like a great relationship with them anyway. So it's not like it affects my day-to-day life as if it were my parents. So yeah, I am very thankful for that. All right. So let's start hearing a little bit about your story and your background, where you came from. And then obviously we'll get to kind of where we are today. So you can go back as far as you want with your childhood and kind of how you ended up in this group.
Okay. It's hard to know exactly how much detail to go into because there's a lot. But so you can stop me at any moment and just speak.
Oh, yeah. No, I love it. I want to hear it all.
But I was born into a conservative Christian family. I would have thought us to be a typical mainstream Christian family at the beginning. I was baptized. We were Presbyterians. And the older I got, the more extreme the teachings that we were drawn to became, and the more fundamentalist my family became, the more controlling my father became. And so as I was writing this book, it was easy to see this escalation into a more extreme version of living. And that's how I became a stay-at-home daughter in the Christian patriarchy movement. And I didn't leave until I was 25. So it took me a long time to get out on my own. But, you know, starting out when I was a baby, I don't think anyone would have predicted that would have happened to me.
You were living at home until you're 25.
Exactly, yeah.
Wow. And so what did your kind of like your as a child, let's say, did you feel like this was a normal home? This is kind of how everyone lives, or did you understand like people live differently?
It was normal for me, but I understood that we were different because when I was little, we lived in a neighborhood and I was the only homeschooled kid on the block. So I understood I'm the only one home during the day and all these other kids are going to school and I'm being taught something different. And I was told that that was to protect me and to make me a godly warrior for Jesus. And so I understood that we were different in that way, but I didn't know anything different for myself. So I didn't really know what that experience would have been like.
What age did you start like thinking, I don't like this. This is different. I wish I was like that family. Did you ever have that? Or did you have enough like influence from your church group that you had enough friendships and stuff that you were kind of satisfied?
I was a very isolated child, so I didn't have a lot of friendships, and I did fixate on things in the outside world, like lunchboxes. I was fixated on having a lunchbox and having a locker, and I thought just having your own thing and like being able to put your own stuff in it and nobody else would have the key, that to me seemed like freedom, and I don't know if I ever communicated that to anybody, but those kinds of things happened early on. And then the older I got, the more I realized how stuck I was and how limited my choices were, especially as I became an adult. So, yeah, there was little things that was when I was a child. And then as I got older, it became more and more restricted as well.
And then what did your like day-to-day life look like, or week-to-week or whatever, as far as your involvement with the church? Obviously, it sounds to me like the high control of the church kind of bled into the family and made that more extreme. So how did that kind of look in your day-to-day life?
So I was homeschooled. So my day-to-day life was me doing very conservative homeschooling curriculum. And when I was younger, my mom would teach me. And then as I got older, I was given the books and I taught myself. So a lot of it was just reading these Christian history books and things like that, or listening to audio tapes from pastors as my education. That was a lot of my day. I also did like piano lessons for most of my childhood. So I had some outside activities, but the biggest part of our week was going to church and being part of our church family. And when I was a teenager, that church that we were part of, I would consider it very high control. It was in a quote unquote normal denomination, but the pastor was this charismatic leader. We, you know, there wasn't a lot of room for nonconformity. Everybody had to be homeschooled and things like that. So my life was, every single day was inside this bubble. Mm-hmm. And my dad was in charge of everything in my life, because in Christian patriarchy, and when I say that term, like some people are like, well, what actual group were you in? Like, that's what we called it. We called it Christian patriarchy, and it still exists, but people don't always use that term. And it's more of a movement than a specific group. But within Christian patriarchy, the dad of the family is the ruler. And so the wife and the children are below him, and he makes all the decisions and guides everybody. And he's responsible for them before God and all these quote unquote biblical teachings. So every aspect of my life was controlled by him until I was 25 and I left. So, you know, as a child, most people don't ask questions because children don't have a lot of rights in this country. But then even as an adult, I don't think people understood what was happening to me, because I was in an adult body, but I didn't understand that I had adult rights or that I could move out. So I just was brainwashed and secluded so much that I didn't understand.
Do you have siblings?
I do. I have two older siblings and then a younger brother.
They were all homeschooled as well.
Well, actually, my two older siblings went to the church school.
Oh.
And so this is part of the progression of my family, because my two older siblings started at public school. Then they went to a Christian school. Then they went to the church school. And then I was homeschooled. And then my younger brother was homeschooled as well. So it became more and more restrictive. My sister is 9 years older than me. And my older brother is 6 years older than me. So they were my high school age. And so I think my parents probably figured it's harder to homeschool a teenager when they haven't been started off that way. And it would be easier to start me off that way. I did actually go to the Christian school for a few months in kindergarten, and then they pulled me out.
What about your siblings? What was the difference there as far as what the guys were allowed to do versus the girls? Did that ever become a problem within the household?
Yes. I mean, like I said, it became more restrictive as the older we got. My sister did have a job when she was like 20 years old because she was also told to stay home. But she was allowed to have a job for a little bit. And then something happened and my dad changed his mind and she wasn't ever allowed to work ever again. So after that, I wasn't allowed to work. Women, you know, we were taught as girls that we needed to grow up and be a godly wife, raise kids and homeschool them. And why do you need a job when dad's going to pay for everything and your husband's going to pay for everything after that? So there's no sense of independence. Whereas my younger brother, he was able to take some community college classes and he had a job, even though he still lived at home as well after turning 18. So, I mean, less, still very restricted, but less restrictive.
Okay. And now, are any of your siblings still living at home or have they all left?
No, we all got out in very different, very dramatic ways.
Wow. Okay.
We all have very different stories, actually.
Did your older siblings get out before you did?
Oh, yes. So my older brother, he joined the Army when he was 17. He just kind of, you know, was like, I'm done. And we lost contact with him for a while. But now, you know, we're all my siblings and I, we get along great now. And I'm so thankful that we found a way to like have relationships again. And my older sister got married through this church and we did the biblical courtship thing. So she got married that way. And fast forward more than a decade later, she was divorced and there was abuse in that situation. So I'm really thankful that she was able to find her way out of that because that was really difficult. I mean, in some ways, much more difficult than what I had to go through.
So basically, for a woman, your out was to get married.
Mm-hmm.
And so, but within the church, right?
Right.
You married within the church. Did very many people, you know, court or shop outside the church, or was it all kind of within your group?
It was, there was this running joke in our church that there weren't enough young men.
Oh.
So we had so many teenage girls.
Oh my gosh.
And teenagers, we weren't adults yet. And all the adults were talking about this problem of how they're going to get all these girls married. And so we would do things like family camps where you would invite churches from all over the country to come. And then you could like have your parents mingle and set you up. There was a dating site that was for homeschool alumni. I know one person who got married that way. And so things like that. And we did have a woman live with us because she didn't have a dad. And my dad became her head of household. And he wrote letters to every church in the denomination in that region to ask if they had anybody interested in courting her. And I was like, I am never going to do that. I was so embarrassed.
Yeah, that would be mortifying. Oh, okay. This is sounding so, so, so familiar.
Oh, no.
Definitely lots of similarities we have. Your family camps we just call them camps.
Okay.
But very, very similar. That was where we went fishing. And it was people say, well, was yours an arranged marriage? And I'm like, no, it wasn't necessarily arranged, but you just knew if you found someone that you connected with, you knew from a very young age, oh, I'm going to marry him, because it's like you had to tag them so that no one else would. And so like at 12, I never had boyfriends. I just at 12, I knew who I was going to marry, and that's who I married. And but yes, at camps, it was always the like thing to be prowling, because that was your opportunity to see more than, you know, the 100 people that you saw all week long at home. So,
I mean, you're told that your whole life that your purpose is to get married. And then like, what else are you supposed to think about when you you know,
right,
hang out with other teenagers.
Yeah, that was it. I mean, and too, like, I know for us, that was your friend base. It wasn't. Mm-hmm. So for us, we did go to public school. Not everyone in our group. There was a select few that went to public school. My parents let us go to public school. But even with that, you have this outside influence, but you're trained like it's bad, 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 bad. They're bad, bad, bad. And so even though you're mingling with your school, I call them school friends, they were literally only your friends at school. We didn't do any extracurricular activities. You weren't allowed to go to their houses. Like, it was very, very limited, as friends as you can be with just seeing them at school. So you never would think like, oh, I might be able to date him someday. Never. That wasn't like a thought because it wasn't an option. And so you still had this very small pool to pull from for a potential spouse. But yeah, you were so geared towards, like you said, marriage and having kids right away that was your focus. And I remember in high school, I was engaged. And I remember I wouldn't wear my ring, but I brought it to school because my friends were like, no, you're not. And I'm like, yes, I am. So I brought my ring to school one day. And they're like, oh my gosh, like, you really are engaged.
How old were you when you got engaged?
I think I was probably 17, 18. Okay. Yeah, I would have been probably junior, senior.
And they probably thought that was crazy.
Oh, insane.
That would have been normal.
It is. Yeah. Oh, yeah, totally. Well, and honestly, like I waited until I was 19 because I graduated and then I waited almost a full year before we actually got married. And I don't remember why, but I was 19 when we got married. But that was kind of old and weird, too, to wait that long. Like, you've just graduated high school. Why aren't you getting married? Like, why are you waiting?
Why the wait?
Yeah. Why would you wait? Which actually, it probably had more to do with like his job and his income and stuff, because you have to be able to like afford to live on your own, because we did the same thing. You lived with your parents, even the guys, until you got married. And then it was like, now you're on your own and good luck.
Yeah.
Which was so healthy. So helpful. And I had a couple of my high school friends that came to my wedding, and like our weddings were very like everyone in our group was invited, and we called ourselves assemblies. So we would have different assemblies, which were our different like locations. And so we were up here above Sacramento, and we were known as the Sacramento Assembly. But then in California, we had like three other assemblies. And then in a couple different states, we had some different assemblies. So whenever there was a big event or a wedding or anything, anyone from any of the groups is welcome to come. So it's not like an invite only type wedding. If there's anything I could redo, it would be my whole wedding experience.
Wow.
So we had to rent this like massive ballroom down in Sacramento, and there was over 600 people in attendance.
Oh, my goodness.
And yeah. And it's like, and half these people, like, I know all of them because you see them at camps, and you know, maybe one's friends with your dad or whatever. So it's not that I didn't know them, but it's not like I had relationships with, I mean, maybe I had relationships with like five people in the whole room, you know?
Oh, wow.
So it was just weird. But anyway, so my high school friends, a couple of them came, and they were just like, oh my gosh, like, she's weird here too. She was weird at school, but she's weird here too.
Oh my God.
It was very, 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 very weird.
And I'm going to guess no drinking and no dancing.
Oh, no. Yeah, no. And luckily, because our weddings were so good, luckily we didn't do like receptions like a normal wedding.
Oh, okay.
No, it was just like a cake reception. So in the back of the room, you would cut the cake, everyone get a piece of cake, and you leave.
Yeah.
So very like not a party, not like, it's more like a gathering time to visit with people you haven't seen for a while. And I'm let's see this nothing beautiful building.
There's nothing more fun than getting 600 cult members together sober to talk and eat cake.
Oh my gosh, like, I was just talking with someone. Oh, I know who it was. Well, Shantae, she was at St.
Yeah.
Louis, and we were just texting the other day, and we're like, man, if we could, like, some of these people drunk or high would be so much fun. Like, if we could, like, have this experience, I feel like it could be amazing, and we could do a whole TV show off of it.
Just relax your shoulders, chill a little bit.
Right, right. Quit talking in word salad words. Just talk like a normal human. Yeah, it would be amazing. I think it would be hilarious.
That would be great.
But yeah, so lots of similarities between you and I think. But again, you were just primed for marriage. So in high school, you know, other kids are talking about college and careers and what they're going to do. And I'm just like, well, you get married. Like, that doesn't make any sense. Why make plans? You know, you're just going to get married. And I feel like I had it very, I was very fortunate. My family was like a rebellious family in our group, which now we're like, woohoo. but at the time it was like, my sister and I put a lot of stress on our parents because we called them men's meetings because men are obviously the ones in charge. So whenever my sister and I would screw up, my dad would have to go to a men's meeting for like 6 hours and figure out how to fix us. But we were very rebellious. So we did go to school, which was one of the big things, but we still had to like dress how we always dressed, which was like skirts and, you know, no tank tops or anything like that. Very, very conservative. You weren't supposed to cut your hair, makeup, nail polish, you know, kind of tattoos, all that stuff. The norm. And so, yeah, it was hard to get through school. Like, I was thankful that we went to public school, but at the same time, like, we went through hell going through public school because we were not normal. Like, we were definitely the odd ones out when it came to being in public school. So it wasn't like a great fun experience, but I think it gives me a good perspective now, like raising children, like when it comes to bullying and things like that, I can relate very easily. So I'm like, hey, let me talk to you. Like, and so I'm thankful for it in many ways, but it was definitely not a fun experience. And then one of my kids wants to homeschool right now. And I'm like, no, you don't. No, you don't. Please experience high school. Like, please. Yeah. Like, you have to go to the dances and do all the fun things because that's what normal people do. Like, we didn't get to do that. But, oh, my gosh. Oh, my gosh. I remember when another thing my dad let us do is have jobs. And when I probably was a senior in high school and I was doing like a waitress job at a local restaurant. And one of my friends that I worked with there, he had gone on a trip and he brought everyone gifts back when he came back. And he brought me earrings. Well, I have my ears pierced because we weren't allowed to. And it was like one of those moments you just don't forget because he felt so bad, like thinking this like 17-year-old didn't have her ears pierced. Like, I'm sorry, I just got earrings for all the girls, you know?
Oh, no.
But it's one of those things you don't forget because it was so embarrassing. And then you're trying to explain and at work, I could kind of avoid, I had to wear skirts still, but you could kind of avoid a lot of the like uncomfortable conversations because you only saw them, you know, enough that you could just get away with it. And you're wearing like mostly uniform with the skirt, of course. And so it's, you know, a little bit more even. But that experience, I'm like, oh, man, here we go. I thought I could get away with kind of being normal in this situation. But no, I do not have my ears pierced. And it's not because I'm afraid of needles. So, yeah, that was fun. That was fun. But did you guys have to dress real modestly? What was your kind of dress code?
I mean, at the time, I thought our family was, I mean, liberal is not the right word. Less conservative because we were allowed to wear pants at home.
Okay. Yeah.
And baggy pants, I should clarify.
Right. Yes.
And longer shorts, mm-hmm. You know, not on Sundays. You know, that didn't really matter too much because we were homeschooled. So we didn't see people. And we lived in the mountains. So it was easier to like navigate.
get away with it.
Yeah. So, but at church, there was quite the mix. There were people who would wear head coverings. There were people who, like, you know, head to toe covered denim jumpers type of people. And so there was just like a wide variety. But everything had to be modest. Like, you know, there was like a bare minimum. And I remember one girl got in trouble because she had a skirt above her knees. And it was just like this whole church-wide scandal because of what she wore. And yeah, all these men were noticing. So like, that's a problem.
So creepy. Yeah. So creepy. How did it feel? Because like for us, modesty was obviously a huge thing. And when I talk with my sister, we talk about how like we were like over sexualized almost because you were so self-conscious. Like I'm even still will have things inside that I'm like, oh, but is that, and I'm like, shut up, just wear it. Like, I don't care. But like where you're so like so above just your normal, like everyone has their own standards, right? Like, you know, and that's great. And I totally respect that. But this was so far above that. And it was because we don't want to have make the men sin. And right. so much was put on us. And this is from like birth basically on as like, well, you know, you, even as a 5-year-old kid, could make a man sin. And it gives us kind of a lot of power now that I think about it, but which is surprising. They probably didn't think of that side of it. But awful, like to grow up in that kind of environment where it's like, well,
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous 2-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass?
So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
You're not modest, it's you. It's your fault for causing these men to sin. And that sounds kind of similar.
Yeah, I mean, that's how I actually, one of the first chapters of my book starts out with this early memory. I think I was around 5 and we were on vacation and I had a hand-me-down swimsuit, but it was a 2-piece. I was 5 and my dad told my mother to tell me to go change. And I was just so confused. You know, because I'm 5 years old and I didn't understand, but it started then like that shame about my body and just like constantly aware of how men, specifically my dad, looked at me. And that was really problematic. Like the entire time I lived with him, he would inspect my clothes. And it's just like while I was wearing them, you know, and it's just like really creepy in a way to have your dad inspect you like that.
Very not normal. This is not what, you know, a normal dad does. Like, oh my gosh.
But I wouldn't have known that. I didn't know that.
No. Yeah.
The way it made me feel.
And that's, again, where I'm so thankful is that my dad wasn't that way. Like, he was clueless. He just knew when he'd get called into a men meeting, like, what did we do this time, you know? And he was, my parents were the same, like, as you were talking, like, at home, we were able to wear, again, like, baggy shorts or we had a swimming pool. So, and it was just 3 girls in the family, so that was lucky for us. So we were able to swim and wear bathing suits and stuff. But it was always so awkward, like when we'd have friends over or when we go to friends' houses that have pools, because everyone would wear clothes over their bathing suits to swim. And we were so used to just swimming in swimsuits. And my mom, I remember telling us, like, you don't have to put clothes on over your bathing suit, like you're swimming, because we were like practical like that and you didn't want to like drown. So but we would do it because we were the only ones that won it, and so we put a big t-shirt and culottes on over our bathing suits and hope not to drown. And even that, it's like
dangerous.
It's so dangerous, like there's so many things. I'm like, all in the name of modesty, let me tell you stand up out of that pool with wet clothes on you, there's a lot more to look at than if you were just like in a normal bathing suit looking like everyone else.
Right.
Like if you went to a public pool, guess who's going to be looking? Or the beach? Oh, that was fun. Guess who's looking at, everyone's looking at us. They probably wouldn't have even noticed us if we were dressed normally.
Yeah.
I want to hear more about your story. I'm talking a lot. So you got out when you were 25. Did you just up and leave? Was there events that led up to it that you're like, oh, I can leave? Or how did kind of that go?
Okay, so it was like a step-by-step me coming awake and figuring out that this is not okay and I need to get out or I'm not going to survive this. It just like literally became that clear to me, like how bad this was for me. When I was 18, my parents moved from Colorado to Hawaii for my dad's job. And so I was writing about this the other day because people always thought like, wow, you're so lucky you get to go to Hawaii and like live in paradise. And it's such a beautiful place and a beautiful culture. And I was so isolated and so controlled there that it was like a prison. And it's very hard to get that across when it's like, yes, I have privilege. I was able to live there for a time in my life. But I didn't have much of a choice about anything, you know. So it's both of those things. So right after I graduated from homeschool, we moved there. And, you know, this is a big part of the book is my family helping start a church plant. I started teaching piano lessons because my dad was encouraging me to like teach other homeschoolers and people he worked with. And so I was able to get some money that way. And then I had a courtship when I was 20. And I got my heart broken really bad because my dad ended the relationship after a really long time of this going on, and I thought I was going to get married. And I talk about this. I don't want to tell too much detail because I don't want to minimize how complicated the situation was. But I just at the end of it, my dad told me I needed to repent because I was having too many emotions. I was being too attached to this person. And that was sinful because I was cheating on my future spouse and hurting his future spouse. And so at that moment, like, my heart knew, like, that's not true. Like, you can't tell me to say I deserve hell for feeling love for someone. It doesn't make any sense. And so that's when I realized I'm never going to let this happen to me again, where I'm going to let my dad take away somebody if I love them. So that was when I was 20, right? And I didn't get out until I was 25. So, you know, I'm trying to figure out how to live with this idea. I still have this belief that I need to obey my father to obey God. So that's what's so tricky about spiritual abuse is you think, well, I don't think this is all right, but as long as I obey, then God will bless me, right? So it's like justifying the abuse that was happening because it was escalating. The emotional verbal abuse was escalating in my 20s. And it took a long time for me to like really, for it to really click that I don't think if there is a God, he, they, she would want me to be abused. I don't think God would want me to sit here and suffer because my dad, maybe he doesn't have the best intentions for me, actually. And so having to make that mental leap took so much time. That is like the bigger arc of it. And then along the way, there were like a handful of people, like a couple people who said small things to me like, are you okay with this? Or what if you went to college? And at the time, I had all the answers rehearsed, you know, like, well, I don't go to college because I'm going to become a wife and a mother, and that's what God wants for me, blah, blah, blah. But just them asking that question, I registered that, I tucked it in the back of my head, and I thought about it once in a while, you know, and then those questions build up. And I was like, yeah, what if I moved out? What if I don't know, went to college? Just imagining what a different life could be like and not knowing too much about the outside world, that's difficult to do. So that's the place I was at in my early 20s, is just sorting through that and depression and anxiety and my dad's control tightening. And then I was ready to like move out and find my older brother and like move in with him because he was the only person I had talked to about this. And then we got a new pastor and he had a lot of sons.
Oh, girl.
And I'm opening this really weird, but like,
we know what's going to happen.
Then one of them became my best friend. And and our relationship just grew over this time period in my early 20s. And we fell in love. And I was like, well, I'm not going to let my dad take this person away from me. And he was like, we need to help. We need to go through your dad and like keep it on the straight and narrow, right? So we tried that and we were allowed to have a courtship for 1 week. And then my dad was like, never mind.
Oh my gosh.
And I was like,
even though this is like the pastor's son?
Yeah. He was like, maybe after he goes to college and has $40,000 and like then maybe. So at that point, I'm like, your rules aren't making sense anymore. So we basically had a secret relationship and decided that we wanted to get married. And that's what escalated me leaving. He left first, and then I followed him to Michigan, and we got married here. That's where I live now. And that was 10 years ago. So, yeah, it's been.
And that's who you're married to right now.
Yeah, it is.
Oh, my God. What a great story. And was that in Hawaii then?
Yes. Yeah. So okay. That's where we met and got engaged. And then we moved here to, like, start a new life. And his family isn't quite as strict as mine. So the church wasn't quite the same as my older church when I was a teenager. So I just want to clarify that. But still, it was really difficult to communicate like what was happening in my family. And David, my husband, is the only person who like really understood, like, because he saw it the way my dad treated me. He started treating him like that. And so he's the only person who's been through that with me, you know.
Wow.
And wanted me to make my own choices. Even though I did leave through marriage, technically, it was a very different kind of marriage than I was supposed to have. Because I did it on my own terms.
And now, so did you get married like without your parents? Were they involved at all? Or did you leave and then get married?
We left and got married and they did come to the wedding.
Okay.
At that point, I get into this in the book too, like, certain kind of people, when they're controlling like that, they don't want other people to know how controlling they are. So like, my dad showed up and like played the part, you know, everything went fine. I mean, I don't have a relationship with him anymore, but at the time I was really thankful that they even came.
And what about your siblings? Were they able to come as well?
Yes, they all came.
Okay. Yeah. That is such a great story. Well, and there's so many, and obviously you guys met when you were a little bit older, so that's probably a little different than like me. I knew my husband like forever since we were, you know, born.
Okay. I left in April. We got married in June.
Okay. So pretty much your whole marriage has been a part of your deconstruction like journey. How has that been? Like, I know how ours is. And so like, how has that been for you both?
I think because our families are slightly different, we've had like staggered experiences with this. For me, I had PTSD and I didn't know it. And so the first few years of our marriage, I was like having panic attacks and like struggling to communicate and, you know, trying to figure out how to live on the outside world. And he hadn't been as isolated as I had been. So he didn't have that same anxiety about the same things. I was working through PTSD first, and then like once I started getting help, and then like figuring out what I believe, and then it just pushed me to analyze that. Whereas he didn't come from a place where he felt like he needed to, and so he's only done that in the past few years. So we've had like that's been interesting for me to be in a certain place with what I believe about the world, and then him being in a different place, and then figuring out how to live together and how to have, you know, what are our shared values, and we still love each other and we want to live together and make this work. And I was so afraid when I was, because I was deconstructing this a lot faster than him. I was like, he's going to leave because I'm becoming that you know, I don't know what they would call me. Been called all the names, but
like an actual independent woman, and you shouldn't be.
And then he just took in the I like communicated to him. I learned how to communicate, and then I communicated to him what I was thinking and feeling. And over time, and I was like, I don't believe these certain things anymore. And it was like, at first it was just like him processing that. And he was like, well, I love you and I want to be with you. Like, that doesn't matter. And so I don't think everyone gets that experience, to be able to go through all that with a spouse and still like be able to accept each other, because we've both changed so much, but we've had to learn how to evolve together and let each other be who we are, you know? It's difficult. It's, and I'm not going to pretend it's easy. We've done a lot of like marriage counseling and therapy and stuff, and it's still an ongoing process. So
Well, and it's so, I think marriage, and for anyone, is not easy, or even just partnership with anyone is not easy, because living with another human is a learning experience. And so I think when you come with less knowledge of what that could look like, it definitely is more challenging, because you've got a lot of things to work through, and with no preparation, really. You know, when you've lived in your household till under your dad's, you know, authority or whatever, till you're 25, there's a lot you haven't experienced in life that is gonna, you have to learn and get through. Now, do you feel like when you talk about kind of, you know, your recovery type process, did you start that? Do you feel like pretty early on, or did you get married and kind of like, okay, this is our new life?
Yeah, I think I, you know, I was figuring out that what abuse meant and consent when I was still with my parents. Those were the things I was figuring out. And that's what helped me leave, is that information of this is not okay. And then when I got out, I still wanted to be part of the church. And part of me wanted to, part of me felt like I had to be. So we joined a church that felt less strict. And I thought at first, I was like, wow, the women are wearing pants. And like, we don't only sing psalms, you know, like there's some things that are like, to me, felt liberating. So at first that was great, and then over time being there, more things showed up, and like the more subtle side of patriarchy. And I realized, even if you don't use that term, people are living that way in a lot of Christian churches. Even if maybe women have jobs, they still have to like submit to their husbands, you know, or like say that they do anyways. And a friend of mine at the church was in an abusive marriage, and the church handled it very poorly. And I was like, they don't get it. And so I tried like creating material to help educate people about abuse. And but then I had to get my husband's permission to share it with the church. So it's like, I should have known this was not the place for me. And then over time, they started having materials like in Sunday school from some of the leaders that were part of my childhood, you know, women need to stay home stuff. And I was like, no, so I spoke up as much as I could. At the same time, I'm like deconstructing what I really believe on a faith level. And then I know very clearly, like, that is wrong. And then I'm trying to figure out what I believe anyways. So yeah, that's been the past 5 years, I would say.
So you've been out for 10 years, and you're still married. I love it, though. I love it. It's always like, I'm so surprised. I was not expecting your story to go that way, because I knew you were married, obviously, because I saw you guys. But I was like, I was not expecting it to be from when you were still there. So that's amazing, though. Like, some of us. Well, and the sad thing is, like, yours is a little different. Are a lot different than mine, but because you were older, and so I think that was different. And when you met him and became friends, obviously, when you're older,
And for us, it was like we knew each other forever and got married and just expect like, oh, you just you're best friends. So you should get married and move in together and everything is peachy. And it's not how it goes.
No.
There's so many, like including my sister, where it doesn't work out. There's so much divorce from my group, rightfully so, because most of these people should have never been married in the first place. And they were given no preparation on what marriage is anyway, in a proper way or anyway. It was just you live with mom and dad, and then you move in with someone else. So so it is cool when I hear someone like, oh my gosh, you're still married. Me too. Not that it's been easy, but you know, for some of us, it worked out, but like not very many. Like
no, and a lot of my friends, you know, when I was a teenager, a lot of them are divorced, and I think I'm so proud of them for getting divorced.
Yes.
In some cases, it was literally trying to survive by getting divorced because of the abuse that was happening. So like, I want to be really clear, like a divorce is an option. Don't stay with someone who's hurting you, you know? And and I'm really, my heart's broken over those friends who had to go through that because of what we were taught, you know?
Oh, yeah.
And in some ways, I'm lucky that way just because I didn't get stuck in a marriage where abuse was happening.
Yeah.
And I don't think that's anything about me. I think that was just like kind of play of the cards.
It turned out that way. Yeah. Yeah. Well, and that's the thing. I think because the men are given such power when they're given all this authority. So I think that's another, you know, way that the abuse is so heavily used in these types of groups, because the men have that authority and are given this power. And so it's like, yeah, of course it's going to trickle into the home life. Mm-hmm. And then women aren't given any power at all. So they're used to just taking it and dealing with it on their, and that's the thing too with help. There's no one to go to, we would go to leadership if you had a problem with something. And the ones I knew that were handled in abusive situations were handled exactly like what you said. You just shut up and deal with it. Like submit to your husband, basically. Oh, it does sound terrible, but submit to your husband. And so, you know, then people hear about that and they're less likely to go to get help. So they just deal with it in the first place because, you know, you're not going to get real help. And it's very, very sad. And it puts women in very dangerous situations, and then kids too, because most of these women are pumping out the kids because that's your next job after getting married. Right. And well, I really am so thankful that you shared part of your story with us. I'm excited about your book coming out. I'm really excited to start go listen to your podcast because I can do that like today. But your book is coming out in April, you said?
Yes, April 30th. Okay. Which is actually last year we started, or the Coalition for Responsible Home Education started the Day of the Homeschool Child. So that's actually the same day. And so I'm really excited that I get to share the day with this. It's kind of symbolic, like, you know, homeschooled children growing up, and we take back our voices and try to protect the other homeschooled kids.
I really, really love that. That is so exciting. And I'm just so proud of you in writing this book, because I've tried about 3 times now and had to put a stop to it until I'm ready. I know how hard it is even just to begin. So I'm very excited. But also, you're an editor. So now that I know that, you're really in trouble because I'm going to be like, so I'm starting to write again. How you doing today, Kate?
No, that is like my favorite thing, is to talk to people about what they're writing. And yeah.
So okay. Please do. Okay. But that's very, very exciting to have your own book out. And I'm excited for that to be available to everyone, and we'll definitely link that in the notes so everyone can find it as soon as it's available or pre-order it. I'm sure they could do that soon too. I'll be leaving all that information for everyone in the notes, but I'm just like, I want to know it all. I want to know all the story. So I'm glad that the book is only a couple of months out. Is there anything else you would like to share with us?
No, I really enjoyed it. It's really nice to talk to somebody who is coming from a similar place, you know. I enjoy doing these interviews, and it's especially fun. I mean, fun is a strong word, but like with you, it's been fun.
Yeah. I try to make it a little fun.
Yeah. I mean, it is difficult. It is difficult to share these things. But when someone already understands like a baseline of what that feels like, we can laugh about it, you know, and we can make jokes. And that's not, that might seem weird to other people, but it's really healing to be able to laugh a little bit. Yeah.
And my audience is, they're used to it now because I, I think every interview we have to laugh a little bit. So it's, but it is, it is hard. It's a serious situation. It's big discussions that need to be happening, but we have to be able to laugh about it. And that's why I love the ones with my sister too. We laugh a lot because most of what we're laughing at, it's ridiculous. Like when you think about like, and then we like, what? Like, you stayed till you were 25? What is wrong with you? You know, like, it seems so ridiculous, but it's real life. And it is, there's that control. And like you said, people think like, oh, you're 25. Why can't you just leave? Well, there's a lot more that goes into just leaving. And I'm excited to read more details in your book about that. But it's a process. It's not an easy thing for someone to just leave. And for people that can't understand, good. I'm glad you can't understand that.
Right, yeah.
That means that you were in a home like that. But yeah, at some point we do have to kind of laugh a little bit though. And otherwise we just cry all the time, I feel like, or I would at least.
Yeah, it's hard. It's hard stuff. But it's so nice that we're having these conversations now. I think when I left 10 years ago, I didn't feel like anybody was talking about this kind of thing.
No.
And so it was difficult to like crawl myself out of the hole. Now I'm so thankful that more people are talking about it, because I know there are lots of people still stuck in these situations. So like, the more we can talk about it, the more people can get help, because information is powerful. And so and that's why I just want to shout out Tears of Eden.
Talk a little bit about what you're doing now. Let's talk about that a little bit.
So I'm volunteering with Tears of Eden on their editorial board, which means I work on the blog, on the website, and helping people tell their stories on our blog if they want to. So sometimes people reach out to me. Sometimes I'll see something they posted on their blog and ask if we can repost it. But it's just such a powerful thing to see people tell their stories when they want to and how they want to. And I think for a lot of people, just telling the story to themselves is what needs to happen. You know, not everybody wants to or needs to share publicly. So I don't want to say that we have to do that. But the people who have shared with us, it's just the kind of work I get excited about, because we're building something new. We're building not a new church, not a new like cult, but just like a new way to relate to other people and to share our experiences and accept who we are and each other, and then move forward, you know, taking back our own stories. So that's just my part at Tears of Eden, but we have other resources as well. We have virtual support groups, which are really, really needed. We have a very long wait list because it's hard to finance these groups. And last year was our first, as you know, our first retreat. So that was really fun and exciting. We did that in correlation with the story jam. So just meeting people in person, like I hadn't met a lot of them in person. So that was really awesome for me. So yeah, so check out tearsofeden.org. Lots of resources there. If this story sounds familiar to you at all, it can be helpful.
I love what you guys are doing there. I think, again, it's getting these resources out there. Like you were saying, like 10 years ago, I never saw anything like this. But I really, really appreciate you sharing your story with us. It was so wonderful to meet you. And like I said before we started this, I wish we could just all hang out.
Maybe
we should do like a Zoom hangout, you know, where we can all like connect. I think that would be fun.
That'd be fun.
I think that would be really fun, because I feel like now since Story Jam, I've gotten to know, well, a lot of you have been on the podcast now. And so I've got to know you from this, from doing the interviews, but then even just a little bit more so through social media. Now that we've met in person, it's been really fun to connect that way. And I'm like, oh, I know them better now. And so, but it was a great experience to meet everyone in person though.
Yeah, you're the best. And when you came out on stage in that prairie dress, which I'm assuming you got at Target.
Yep.
My heart was like so full. I was like, this is what I need to see.
Oh, good. I'm so glad. Oh, that was fun though. That was such an amazing event.
Well, thank you so much for being here on the Shannon Pant Show. And and we'll have to chat again soon. And I'm excited about your book and your busy year ahead. And hopefully we could connect again at some point.
That sounds awesome. Thank you for having me on.
You're welcome. You're welcome.
Thank you all for joining me for another episode of the Shanny Pant Show. I really appreciate you guys hanging out with me every week. You can find all of my links to all my social medias, anything your heart desires, at shannypantshow.com. You can even find my amazing merch is back up and running there. And you can email me from there, all the things. Also, you always ask, how can you help me out with this whole podcast situation? You can subscribe to my podcast, you can leave reviews, you can share it with friends. I appreciate it all. So I am super excited to bring you guys the rest of the season. It's going to be amazing, and I'll see you next week.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.